You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 21st of October 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Once again, we've reached the end of another week, and the weekend is almost here. And that means you are either listening to this on your way home from work, or in your lunch hour, or maybe downloading it from the archive at RadioAlbion.com. But you are here today to hear from my co-host all the way from Texas, Mr. Grandpa Dan. Grandpa, how are you doing, sir?
Well, I'm doing all right. I just wanted to take a moment to congratulate the head of lettuce. congratulations. I'm a little disappointed because, you know, I've been pro Liz Truss through the whole thing, you know. So, yeah, but congratulations where due. Otherwise, yeah, I know we're doing great. Things have cooled off here. We're definitely into autumn here in Texas. So the heat has let off and things are great. And yeah, looking forward to yet another fun-filled installment here, the Daily Nationalist.
Yeah, we certainly did point out Liz Truss's deficiency some months back. You did in particular, and she really didn't have much time to actually make many changes. She certainly didn't have any time to change social media or increase censorship on there. But we will be talking about that today, because social media has done extraordinary damage to democracy, public health and safety, says an expert. Social media companies have increasingly played major roles in political discourse around the world, and according to one expert, the fallout has been significant. We've had extraordinary damage done to democracy, public health, public safety, and people's ability to make their own choices. Roger McNamee, the managing director at Elevation Partners and an early Facebook investor, told Yahoo Finance Live. Yet policymakers have done nothing. Absolutely nothing. Let's just think about that here. He's saying that it has affected people's ability to make their own choices. Hearing a plurality of views has affected people, and it means that they are no longer making their own choices. Well, surely that must mean that without the plurality of views, when there's only one view, that's the choice that people are supposed to make. I mean, clearly, if you hear lots of different points of view, then you have a choice. And you can make a choice from that choice. But what this expert is saying is that there should be no choice. And then you're free to make a choice just from one point of view. That is what we should actually have on social media. And he's saying that this is a threat to democracy. Free speech is a threat to democracy, public health and public safety. I guess the public health bit is a reference to COVID and people putting up medical studies and offering up other information there about COVID and about the vaccines. So we certainly can't have that. We've got to remove that, and we can only have one voice on social media. You sort of get a feeling that they would just rather as if we didn't have any social media at all, don't you, Grandpa? What do you make of this?
Well, they'd like to have a social media where you only get the media's point of view, where you only get the narrative put out, because the media just regurgitates basically whatever the government is saying. And so they want a social media where that's all you get. One of my first takeaways from this story is we've done for the term expert what Facebook has done for the term friends. Why is this guy suddenly an expert on this? Because he was some investor? I mean, wait a minute. Why does that suddenly make this guy an expert on the democracy and the effect of social media because he was an early investor in Facebook? You know, they tout these media stories come out and it's like, oh, we've got this guy and he's an expert. Well, what makes him an expert? Well, he's some financial guy. You know, he's not an expert on anything. That's just his opinion. But you see, it's portrayed in the media as, you know, he's an expert and we've got to listen to the experts. You pointed out the health issue of this. They try to create that. the satanic inversion is always there. It's always the backwards of the truth. And what they do and what they promote is always projected on everyone else. They try to get this idea like, oh, you have all of these crackpots. They want to create this impression that people that disagree with the narrative are a bunch of crazy crackpots. For instance, with the COVID thing, like you brought up, oh, well, all these people saying the vaccines are untested, there's no long-term studies, and they're harmful. They're just a bunch of crazy crackpots living in someone's basement. But they ignore the fact that most of the people bringing this up were actually experts, literally not just some investor guy that the media went and found, literal experts in their fields. We had panels of doctors saying it's insane to be injecting everybody with this, literally experts, and they were all banned. They were all banned from social media. And this guy's going on about how it's this great threat, you know, and apparently it's kind of like we were talking recently about, you know, the answer to everything is more immigration. You know, Liz Truss, you know, rest in peace. Liz Truss had said, you know, we're going to boost the economy with more immigration. No matter what, the answer is always more immigration. When it comes to the experts that we get in the media, the answer is always more censorship. This is what we got to have more. We've got to have more censorship. We've got to have fewer choices, because you see, people are it's affecting people's ability to make their own choices. Because, as you said, you're not allowed to hear more opinions. You're supposed to just get one opinion. And when you choose the one option, see, you made the right choice. See, they're ultimately they are the ultimate arbitrators of what your choice should be. It's like how our election system works here in the U.S. We have Team D, Team R, and you get one pre-selected candidate from each party, and then you choose between the pre-selected candidates. But you don't actually get a choice of who's going to be president or who's going to be your congressperson. You get a pre-selected choice, and then you get to choose between those. At the end of the day, nothing changes. It just amazes me. They drug up these experts, and how many shows have we done, Sven, where their answers are always the same? We need more censorship, fewer points of view, and fewer choices, and ultimately less freedom.
You know, we certainly can't have more than one point of view being heard, because the social media user might choose the wrong point of view to subscribe to. Companies like Facebook parent Meta and Twitter have garnered criticism over the past decade, largely due to their dissemination of misinformation and disinformation as it relates to elections. In recent years, Twitter in particular has been lambasted for elevating the platforms of former President Donald Trump, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, and most recently rapper Kanye West. Earlier this week, West utilized Twitter and Instagram to share anti-Semitic comments before his accounts were eventually locked due to hate speech. So we have Kanye West there pointing out that the Jews have a disproportionate amount of control over social media. And what do we see straight away? We see Kanye West removed from social media. And what does he say here? He's saying it's all about dissemination of misinformation and disinformation as it relates to elections. But hang on a minute, who is it, the people on Twitter, that is being complained about here? Well, it was the President of America. Surely he has a right to comment on elections. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, surely she has a right to comment on elections. And in actual fact, it was the President of America that actually had his account removed from Twitter. I believe he had something like 90 million followers, and I think the most popular man in the history of the world, Joe Biden, had something like 10 million followers. And I should imagine most of them were just bots. Kanye West has now said that he's going to be buying Parler. So we have Elon Musk buying Twitter, and we have Kanye West buying Parler. And as somebody pointed out the other day, why don't they buy Wikipedia next? If they really want to start changing the narrative, that would be the next one to get. But it's certainly good news that Kanye is buying Parler, and certainly good news, really, that he's making use of his free speech in America to highlight the censorship issues, and also to highlight what happens if you criticize those who cannot be criticized. You get cancelled. And Kanye West is probably the richest black man ever in the history of the world. So very good to see him taking a stand for White Lives Matter, and also good for him taking a stand for free speech and trying to draw attention to disproportionate influences in the media. Grandpa, what do you make of what's being said here?
I always pick up these subtleties they try to imply. They talk when they mention Ye here, because he changed his name to Ye. when they talk about Ye here, you know, he ends that with his accounts were eventually locked due to hate speech. They try to implant this subtle idea into the thoughts into people's minds that there are hate speech laws. We do not have hate speech laws here in the U.S. So you can't say his accounts were banned for hate speech because we don't actually have hate speech laws. That's just Twitter arbitrarily making that decision. It becomes so tiring because through all of this, the problem is the lies involved here, and there's one on top of the other. Going back to the election thing, we get whiplash here in the U.S. because when Trump was elected, they told us the Russians had meddled in the election and our democracy had been threatened, and then we had all of these Russians somehow undermining our precious and fragile democracy. Then Joe Biden was fraudulently put into office. And I'm just going to say it. I speak the truth. Everybody knows. Look, everybody here knows that massive election fraud took place. You're not supposed to say it. They threaten you. They'll put you in jail for saying it. But it's the truth. The guy was fraudulently put into they did massive election fraud. It's well documented. There's videos of everybody knows they did this. So they have to double down on saying you're not allowed to say that. And because everybody knows this, they came out and say that's ridiculous. It's crackpot conspiracy theory. Once again, the same narrative, crackpot conspiracy theory. People just think that. And our democracy is so solid and our voting system is impregnable. Nobody can commit voter fraud. It's almost impossible for anything to undermine our elections because they're perfect here in the U.S. Well, now we're coming up on these midterm elections, and now they're back. They've recycled that the Russians are interfering with our elections again. We just keep contradicting ourselves because it's all about it's all about promoting these lies. With the whole Ye thing, it's so tiring. Look, everybody knows the Jews run Hollywood. Everybody knows the Jews disproportionately control banking and the media. It's so tiring that you're just not allowed to point that out. I don't know why they don't just come out and say, well, yeah, they do, but it's not like they're doing anything really harmful. Or, yeah, maybe they promote disproportionately liberal policies, you know, but that's just, you know, their political point of view, and have a discussion on that level, because at least there would be a certain amount of honesty involved. This whole notion to where if you just point out the obvious, you know, then you're not allowed to say that, and you get banned and you get condemned for some kind of hate speech for simply pointing out the obvious. I don't know why they don't just shift that conversation to, well, yes, the Jews do have this disproportionate amount of ownership in media and obviously run Hollywood. But, you know, that's not a bad thing. And they're just trying to do the best they can, or they're just, you know, because that would shift the conversation to, you know, well, that's just my free market economy at work and stuff like that. And you could have that conversation. It's just so silly to me that you're not even allowed to point out the obvious. So you're just not allowed to say what everybody already knows.
Well, that's really what's being highlighted here, isn't it? And Kanye West has also been debanked. But the point this expert is trying to make is not that Kanye West was censored for saying things about the Jews, but Kanye West should have been censored before he said things about the Jews. He says, I think the whole situation with Kanye West, with Elon Musk attempting to buy Twitter, really highlights the extraordinary inaction. And frankly, in my mind, really unpardonable inaction by Congress, by the president, to do something about what is clearly a threat, especially to national security, McNamee said. Twitter has a whistleblower who showed that there are people inside Twitter who are working for foreign governments. For a platform that has as much influence on politics and democracy as Twitter has, that is extraordinarily dangerous. I mean, let's just think about this. I mean, he's saying that because Kanye West and Elon Musk are trying to buy Twitter and Parler, that highlights there has been an inaction and not enough people have been censored on there. I mean, the whole point of Kanye West buying Parler and Elon Musk buying Twitter is because there is so much censorship on there. I mean, his argument just doesn't make any sense there. And then he's freaking out that there are people on Twitter that work for foreign governments. I mean, Putin is on Twitter. The Taliban are on Twitter. Viktor Orban is on Twitter. You've got all these different politicians that are actually on there. And surprisingly, they're actually working for their own country rather than working to serve America. I mean, he thinks that this is extraordinarily dangerous that we have a plurality of views on there. As I said before, they just want to have one view all the time. But I do find it quite incredible that he says that because they're buying Twitter, that shows that this inaction has been going on, because it doesn't. It shows that there's been too much censorship that's going on. You know, that's why you've got billionaires buying social media companies, is because of this inaction. That's why you've got Donald Trump setting up Truth Social, which I believe got onto the Google App Store the other day, or the Apple App Store, something like that, and went to number one straight away. That's why you have these people setting up social media accounts, is because you have the mainstream social media that is removing posts, not because they break the law, but because they show a different point of view, and because they don't align with the politics of the owners of those social media accounts. So I doubt very much that you will see Elon Musk or Kanye West removing people for having left-wing views on social media. But that's what we see with left-wing owners of social media. They remove everyone with a right-wing view. What do you make of what's being said here, Grandpa?
I love how everything in this country gets framed as national security, because that's supposed to be like, I don't know, the holy water that makes everything acceptable. If you just frame it somehow as national security, whether that makes any sense or not is irrelevant. Yeah, as far as these alternate social media companies like Yay buying Parler or Trump's social media, I mean, the problem with these alternative social media companies is you create these gulags. I mean, you've got Twitter, which is an echo chamber for people on the, for lack of a better term, the left side of the political spectrum. And then, excuse me, then you create these gulags over here for people on the right wing, and that causes more division. I believe the healthiest environment is for people to interact with one another. You know, and they keep forming this up. We see this through this entire story. He talks about safety. They keep talking about safety. Look, nobody's safety has ever been threatened by disagreeing with you. You know, I mean, your safety is not, if somebody, it's already against the law. You know, if somebody goes on social media, disagrees with you and says, I'm going to come to your house and kill you because you disagree with me, that's against the law. That's already, there are laws on the books to take care of that as far as literal, actual safety. When they throw this term safety around and talking about keeping people safe and social media users safe, but they're not talking, I mean, you're not, your safety is not in danger because someone disagrees with you. They're talking about keeping you safe from getting the wrong ideas. It's the healthiest. It's less. They act like people who are allowed to interact with one another, they have a different view of the world, are going to put each other in danger. Like this is going to cause people to hate each other worse. But I believe it's the opposite. What happens, what's the most unhealthy, is putting these people cordoned off in these gulags, where you've got people on the right wing on these alternate social media platforms echo chambering each other. And you got people over here on Twitter, the Twitter people, and they're echo chambering one another. And what that does is it just cultivates the extremes, you know, and people just start chasing the extremes. It's like, oh, yes, yes. And everybody agrees with me. Well, no, not everybody agrees with you. These people over here disagree with you, but you're not allowed to interact with one another. You know, you should be able to understand that there are people in the world that have a different point of view. And if you're actually looking for the truth, you welcome this because it challenges your views, and you may be right on most things, but hey, they're right on this other little thing here, and you can adjust your views. They want to keep people from seeking the truth. They want to keep people as far away from that as possible, from having their views challenged and understanding that there's other people. This, what they promote here, is what really is, it's aggravating and accentuating division. We have more division, more social upheaval than we've ever had. And their solutions are to continue to exacerbate that, to keep people cordoned off, to not allow them to interact with one another, and to literally hear people out. It's easy to demonize somebody that you never interact with. If you actually talk to these other people, then you understand that, well, you know, they may be stupid, they may be misled, they may live in a bubble, whatever the case may be. But you do understand that they just are people that have a different point of view or whatever. When you cordon everybody off and you don't allow them to interact with one another, that's what's really, it's harmful to society. And I just have to make a comment on his last part here. A Twitter whistleblower showed that there are people inside Twitter who are working for foreign governments. Now, by inside of Twitter, is he talking about people that just simply have Twitter accounts, or is he talking about people that work at Twitter? Because if that is, because he's implying there's people working at Twitter that are also employed by or have affiliations with foreign governments, because he's stepping into really dangerous territory here. Because if you're going to say, well, you shouldn't have anybody who's, say, Chinese working at Twitter because they may have allegiance to the Chinese government, then what are we going to say about having dual citizens holding positions as representatives in the U.S. Congress? Wouldn't that be a larger problem than somebody who happens to be Chinese working at a social media company? Yeah, he's stepping into dangerous territory here. But say, once again, you're not supposed to question any of this. You see, you're just supposed to bow down and just say, oh, yes, this makes sense, because he's an expert.
Yeah, apparently there's something like 7,500 people that are employed by Twitter, and Elon Musk said he was going to get rid of 75% of them. I mean, just what is it they are actually doing at Twitter? It really shouldn't need anybody to maintain it. Well, McNamee, who authored Zucked, Waking Up to the Facebook Catastrophe, laid out three key factors to the ongoing problems with social media: the scale of the platforms, the latency, and the incentives. Facebook, for example, where the worst offences have taken place, has literally billions of posts every day, he said. So the notion that you're going to somehow effectively monitor that number of posts is a big stretch. And even if there were enough moderators and the platform's artificial intelligence platforms worked, he said, there will still be a lag in response. These platforms are just set up to move too quickly. The problem is the harm gets done in the first seconds after these harmful posts are put out, McNamee said. I mean, they really literally cannot stand to just have a few people seeing a meme. Once that meme has got out, that's it. They're terrified that this is going to have such a bad effect on the population, thinking for themselves. And I mean, really, I mean, the answer to this is in what he's saying here. He's saying there's so many posts that are put out that it's absolutely impossible to monitor them all. Well, that's the same as speech, isn't it? Free speech outside when you're talking to people. You know, the government cannot actually monitor what everybody says offline. So why is it that they think that they have a right to monitor everything that's said online? Why is it that they think that they should have a right to censor what people say, prevent people from listening to who they want to listen to? If people want to listen to Donald Trump, they should be allowed to listen to Donald Trump. I mean, he was the president of America. He had a very popular Twitter account, and yet somebody at Twitter decided to just remove him from it. And I don't really understand why he's saying Facebook here is the worst offender. I mean, Facebook has even stricter censorship policies than Twitter, as far as I'm aware, and it's always had those censorship policies. Perhaps he's talking about some of these Facebook groups that get organized to create protests. I mean, that's the useful thing for social media, is you can organize with people for protests in the real world. But of course, they only want officially approved protests, like Black Lives Matter, don't they? They don't want protests against refugees, for example. But I do get this, I do find this interesting here, where he says the harm is done in the first few seconds of a post being put up. I mean, it literally is. If this idea gets out to just one person at all, that's it. The regime is done for. What do you make of it, Grandpa?
Isn't it funny how they switch back and forth from, you know, the most stable thing and the strongest thing in the world is our democracy, to our democracy is so frail and fragile, if somebody puts out a funny meme criticizing it, the whole thing could collapse. Well, you know, we go back and forth between this is the most stable and wonderful system that we live under, that's ever been created, and yet it's teetering on the brink of collapse at all times. If people are allowed to criticize it or question the narrative, our democracy could absolutely collapse. One of the contradictions that constantly comes up in this sort of thing is, on the one hand, they're saying having everybody in the country being able to vote is the greatest thing, because everybody has the ability to understand the issues in depth enough to make an informed decision and to vote on who's going to be the best representative. And then they turn around and it's like everybody is so stupid and retarded that if they hear some kind of crackpot conspiracy theory, they'll just fall for it instantly. They won't be able to figure out the truth. And then our democracy will be collapsed because they're going to vote for the wrong people. Now, he's talking about latency here. And I guess what he's saying here is it's taking them too long to ban everybody. See, it's taking them entirely too long to get people banned. I mean, what's he proposing here for solutions? Is he talking about like investigating, keeping an eye on people so that they can be preemptively banned? Imagine like if you went to Facebook or Twitter and you said, I'm going to start me an account. I've never been on there. I'm just going to start me an account. And you went to open an account and you were told, well, your account's denied because you're on a government list of wrong thing. You know, he's talking about latency. He's saying it's taking too long. You see, they're reactive. The problem is they're reactive. They go in, somebody says bad thing, they disagree with the narrative, then it takes a while for them to get discovered and banned and thrown off and put on the list. What we really need is a government list. We need a government list of wrong thinkers. That way, if you go to create an account, they run it through the government list. You're on the government list for wrong think. No, no, no. You can't have a social media account. You can't have a social media account to begin with. That's the answer. We keep being told about democracy and people keep thinking this has something to do with freedom. And yet the more of this quote unquote, what they're calling democracy we're getting today, which we're never given a definition of, seems to me to equate to less and less freedom.
Well, the most deep rooted issue, however, is that of incentives. This is the one that's killing us, because there's no reason from an economic perspective why these companies should look out for the safety of their users, much less protecting the country's national interest, McNamee said. Right now, the incentives are for them to make as much money as they can, as quickly as they can, and not worry about the consequences. And until that changes, I don't think there's a chance we're going to do anything good about this. The Kanye West controversy illustrated the exception to this, in that it became politically impossible for Twitter not to take action. Most of the time, though, they're going to do nothing, McNamee said. Ultimately, McNamee is pessimistic about the ability to right social media's deepest wrongs, including the proliferation of hate speech, on the platforms. I'm not at all confident that we can fix this problem, he said. Well, he's using quite serious language there, isn't he? This is the one that's killing us. People are actually being killed by free speech on the internet. And he's saying here that about Kanye West, it became politically impossible for Twitter not to take action. I mean, is he saying that if you're not actually at the level of followers that Kanye West is, that Twitter is going to do nothing about censoring you or removing you for challenging the mainstream narratives? And then we get to what this is all about, really. You know, he says to right social media's deepest wrong, the proliferation of hate speech on the platforms. As you pointed out, Grandpa, hate speech is not illegal in America. It doesn't exist in American law. And these are American companies, and they should support the American free speech laws, because if they don't, then they're actually going against the American Constitution. Yet he thinks this is a serious problem. This is one that's actually killing people. And I guess he hasn't actually gone on to the algorithms here yet, but he's talking about these incentives. And people with the algorithm, people just get sent the information that they're interested in. You know, it's always going to be based on the choices that they have already made. And Twitter is going to suggest to them other choices that are in a similar vein. And it's just that's what people want to see. So he's effectively saying we should be telling people what they want to see. They should be wanting to see what the government wants them to see, or what this so-called expert wants them to see. They should not be able to choose what they want to see themselves. It's almost like North Korea, when you're just forced to watch the North Korean television in every cafe, I think, every house. They have a television there, and it's automatically on with dear leader Kim Jong-il. It's the same thing that's going on here, isn't it? He wants everybody just to see one point of view on Twitter. What do you make of his conversation about incentives here, Grandpa?
Well, let me get this straight. He says that Ye's Twitter posts were all fine and dandy until he started criticizing the Jews, then it became politically impossible for him to not ban him. Got it. Check. Okay. You have to stop and ponder what these people are saying, because they throw this stuff out here, I don't think, without even really thinking about the implications of their rhetoric and what they're actually saying. Yeah, he's trying to create this idea, the incentives, you see, because the Twitter and the rest of these social media companies, you see, they're getting rich off of off of these views that disagree with the narrative, but he doesn't ever actually explain to us how that is. I mean, he throws Yay out there, or President Trump out there, like, you know, oh, because these are popular rich celebrities, you see, like, somehow they're paying off Twitter. Well, they're not. I mean, if these social media companies, all their money was in dissident views, then dissidents wouldn't all be banned from them. You know, I mean, you know, all the little people who are nobodies that have been, the countless people that have been banned from these companies for disagreeing with the narrative, that would imply that, you know, there's no financial incentive here. Finances have nothing to do with it. All this has to do with is promoting the narrative. And these social media companies are working tirelessly to do just that. It's like a fake confrontation. You know, he's criticizing the social media companies. They're just not doing enough. These social media companies are working overtime to promote the narrative, to ban people that disagree with what the government says, you know, to step outside the bounds of allowable speech. They're working tirelessly at this. This is the creation of this illusion that you have this criticism. You see, they're just not doing enough banning. Is there really anybody out there who thinks the main problem is Facebook, Twitter, and all the rest of them? You see, they're just not banning people enough. If we had more censorship, then things would be better. If we had more censorship, then people would get along better than what they do now. We have more censorship than we've ever had. And if you look at the social fabric of our society, I think it's pretty safe to say that there's more dissatisfaction, there's more friction than there's ever been before. And with so many things, what's their answer? We just need to do more of it. They're doing these things and it's causing this problem. And when you point out the problem, they said, well, the problem is haven't done enough of it. We need to double down and do even more. If we do even more of it, then suddenly we're going to get a reversal. We're going to get a different result. Of course, it is absolute insanity. They're going to keep promoting more censorship, keep cracking down on more people, and we're going to keep having more social friction.
Well, although McNamee is a renowned tech investor, he has also become one of Big Tech's fiercest critics in recent years, urging the government to get actively involved in better regulation, particularly when it comes to social media. When I first started talking about this publicly in 2017, it was really obvious to me that the issue was the culture, the business model, and algorithms of platforms could undermine democracy and civil rights, he said. I went to Congress, and then continued to push them to try to do something about it, and now more than 5 years have gone by. Several elections have gone by, an insurrection has gone by, a pandemic has been amplified, and yet nothing has been done. I mean, this is quite interesting. An insurrection. I mean, how can you have an insurrection against a sitting president if the insurrection is supportive of the sitting president? An insurrection is the wrong term to use there. The pandemic was amplified not by the people that were highlighting alternative medicine for it and showing information on the vaccines. That didn't amplify the pandemic. Pandemic was amplified by the politicians in the media. And since what's going on here is completely legal under American law, why should the government be getting involved? Why should the government be getting involved and removing people's posts on Twitter if they are completely legal? I mean, this is just talking about removing any criticism or any different opinions that he doesn't want. I do find it interesting that he's complaining that for 5 years he's been trying to get the government to clamp down on something that is completely legal and not illegal. And he thinks that he has the right to do that. And I do find it interesting, these points that he raised, which are actually the opposite in reality. What do you make of what he's saying here, Grandpa?
You're absolutely right. You get this inversion every single time. You know, this inversion, you know, like you say, the government, the narrative was the one hyping up and amplifying, you know, the quote unquote pandemic. You know, not people disagreeing with it. It's always this inversion. They accuse everyone else of doing what they themselves doing. I just have to point out again, this whole article is centered around, we're listening to this guy because he's an expert on what amounts to social issues. I mean, what he's commenting on here are social issues. The fact that people fundamentally disagree with the direction that this country is going in. You know, and instead of addressing the... instead of addressing that, of course, they're calling for more censorship. But this guy is this whole thing is a commentary on society, on our social fabric coming apart. And yet, what makes him an expert? Well, he's an investment guy. I mean, how is an investment guy? How is this guy an expert on our social fabric, on our social discussion, on the social cohesion, on the cohesion of society as a whole? He's just some investment guy. That's it. What makes him an expert? Yet we're all supposed to just we're all just supposed to listen. We're supposed to listen to him. I don't know. You know, he's continuing to push Congress to do something about it. Because, you know, again, his complaint is that everybody has too much free speech. We need less free speech. We need to be cracking down on everybody so that nobody is allowed to have anything. We've had, we've had several elections have gone by. Yes, several elections have gone by. Let's see. The first one in which they said the Russians totally tricked the election and got Trump in there. The next election, which they said it was completely impossible for our elections to be meddled with. And Joe Biden really did get more votes than anybody in the history of the planet. And now we're to the midterms where they're saying the Russians are back meddling in our elections again. I guess that's, are we referring to that? An insurrection has gone by. Again, it wasn't an insurrection. These people went in, walked around, and left. I pointed out on one of my shows recently, you know, when they throw this term insurrection around, there was a violent insurrection. All you have to do to throw cold water over that is to ask, then how did it end? If this was a violent insurrection, how did it end? What, did it end by the military had to go in and tear gas people, water cannon, and shoot them to drive them out of the Capitol? No, it ended. It all falls apart when you ask, how did it end? How did this violent insurrection end? Well, the police and everybody showed up and they told everybody, hey, y'all need to leave now. And they all filed right back out the door that they all were invited to come in with in the first place after having taken their selfies and joked around with one another and took pictures on Nancy Pelosi's desk. And yet, you know, this violent insurrection has gone by, which is somehow, again, the fault that people are allowed to disagree with the government. See, if you weren't allowed to disagree with the narrative, there would have never been a quote unquote violent insurrection. And of course, the pandemic, you would see the government amplified it. But you see, it's just untenable that you had people out there that actually disagreed with this. You had people going around out there not wearing masks and refusing to get the vaccine. And lo and behold, those people are still here. They said that people like myself who weren't wearing the masks aren't getting the vaccine. We were all just going to die. But yep, here we are. We're just fine. We're still alive. We're still kicking. You see, it's not allowed. We shouldn't be allowed to hear any of that.
Nobody regrets not taking the vaccine. Well, one key obstacle is Section 230, which usually provides immunity for online platforms hosting content from third-party users. While McNamee acknowledged the law is incredibly important, he also highlighted where it falls short. Where I think things went off the rails is that the platforms chose, because the economics were better, to favour harmful content over good content, he said. Basically, hate speech, disinformation, and conspiracy theories are extraordinarily profitable because they trigger flight or fight. So people have to pay attention. And in a business where attention is everything, that kind of content is going to rise to the surface repeatedly. Well, that's just democracy, isn't it? I mean, if people are interested in something more, you know, they're going to read it, they're going to watch it, and they're going to share it. And more people are also going to read it and watch it and want to share it because they are interested in it. That's what was democratic about the internet. So if what he is saying here, that this stuff is hate speech or disinformation, it's still popular, isn't it? That's what people are wanting to see. And they're not trying to do this. I mean, he says it's about the economics here, as if these companies are actually making money from this. They're not making money from it. They make money from putting adverts there. And if people, it's basically all about what people want to see. That's what these algorithms are doing. They are providing what people want to see. It's not that they're favoring harmful content over good content. You know, they've got algorithms to try to avoid doing that. It's basically that what people will watch, what they want to watch. And if the algorithms don't show them what they want to watch, then the algorithms are broken, aren't they? And they're going to move to another site. It's not that these sites are specifically favoring this so-called harmful content. It's like when there was a British MP and she complained that YouTube were referring her to Red Ice videos. And the only reason YouTube could have been referring her to Red Ice videos is because she had been watching videos similar to Red Ice content before that. It wasn't that YouTube was deliberately trying to get her to support Red Ice. It was just that the algorithm was working with the previous content that she had been watching. And that's what's going on here. And he should understand this because he's a supposed tech insider or a tech investor. So he's being deliberately disingenuous here by pretending that these platforms are deliberately promoting so-called hate speech because it's profitable. What do you make of it, Grandpa?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. He's contradicting himself all in the same statement. He says that they chose economics were better to favor harmful content, to favor the hate speech. Now, we know this is a lie because if that was the case, if he's trying to act like Twitter and Facebook are these hotbeds for controversy going on. He's trying to say that these platforms are making more money off of people disagreeing with the narrative. But if that was the case, then how come everybody's been banned? I mean, they like you said, they banned the at that time sitting president of the United States. If this is about economics, then how come everybody's already been banned? So he contradicts himself with that. It's just an outright lie. You were being a little more charitable by saying disingenuous. He's a liar. He's an outright liar. And he says, they're profiting by all of this so-called hate speech and disinformation and conspiracy. They're getting rich. Well, he's an investor guy. Tell us exactly. How about spelling out for us exactly? How is it they are profiting from this? Where are they making? Tell us the mechanism by which they are making money. Now, we'll say this, when there is controversy, what do I want to say? People are more interested. At the end of the day, people are more interested, though, in interacting, at least to a certain extent, with people that might have a different point of view. That is more interesting. Would you rather be able to go onto a platform where there's people who agree with you, there's people who are on the polar opposite of your political views, and then a whole bunch of people in the middle, and you're free to interact with all of those people and introduce them to your ideas, and you can hear their point of view, and so that they're not just this weird caricature that you see presented to you in an echo chamber. You see that you can hear their real opinions from them, and you can tell them, well, I disagree. I think you're wrong because how is this? That is more interesting to people than sitting around in a bubble and the only people you're allowed to talk to, the only people you're allowed to read or listen to are people who are just going to mimic what you already believe, what you're already saying. Nobody's interested. That isn't interesting and it's not mentally stimulating and it doesn't move you to thinking. I'm always taken aback that these people act like having your views challenged is this horrible thing when really as a society, I think it's the most healthy thing. To have your views challenged, to enter into good, into debate, into good faith debate, even if you're never going to agree with the person that you're interacting with, you at least understand where they're coming from. You at least understand their point of view and why they think the way they do. When you're insulated from that, and I guess I'm kind of repeating myself here and I apologize for that, but when you're insulated from that, you lose that connection that those are actual people over there that think these things that I don't believe in. And they just become like non-human entities. And this, again, this increases the social friction. This increases this tension that we have in society.
Well, more dialogue is always going to be beneficial unless you're worried that you're wrong, of course. Well, many advocates have been pushing for the repeal of Section 230 for years, arguing that it has shielded companies from any legal responsibility when users take advantage of their platforms to spread dis or misinformation. And that's basically saying that it's not the platform's fault because it is a platform and other people are publishing on it. So it's not the platform's fault, whatever people say on there. I think that's a good law to have. Now, people on the right have been advocating that it gets removed so that these platforms can be fined, basically, because they are only removing right-wing content, they're not removing left-wing content, and then you've got people on the left that are saying, well, this should be removed as well because they think that it will punish the platforms for actually using this right-wing content. So you've got arguments on both the left and the right that are saying that this Section 230 should be removed. But McNamee argued for not only changing the current business model, which he described as surveillance capitalism, using data to manipulate people's choices and behaviours, but also ensuring there are laws to require safety. Interesting there that he admits that they're using data to manipulate people's choices and behaviours, but of course he's claiming that they're being manipulated towards the right. He says, the same way we require safety for transportation or healthcare or other things, we need to require safety around these platforms because the companies have to have an incentive to protect the people who use their systems. I mean, it's almost as if he's talking about there's going to be extreme violence that's going to occur. A baseball bat's going to jump out of the computer screen and smash you across the head. I mean, it's just nonsense, isn't it? I mean, it's just hurty words is the worst that it can be. And then all you have to do is just block the person. You don't have to read what people are putting up there. Grandpa, what are your final thoughts on all of this?
Yeah, this talk about safety and we got to protect people, you know, again, as if hearing somebody that disagrees with you is going to be harmful, you know, somehow going to harm you when it's not. You know, again, if somebody goes on Twitter and sends you a direct message or whatever and says, I'm going to come, you know, to your place of work and murder you, I'm going to come to your house and kill you and your whole family, then that's already illegal. And they should, could, and can, and should be investigated for that. You can't threaten people that you're going to come hurt them. You're going to come kill them or something. You know, but they try to muddy the waters with this idea that people who disagree with you, you know, that somehow is going to be harmful and it threatens your safety. You know, that's just absurd. The Section 230 thing is always interesting to me, and I won't go on about it too long as we wrap up. But it's an interesting thing because the idea of Section 230 is, you know, it originates from, like, if you looked at the telephone, you had somebody that used the telephone to call another guy and plot a crime. You can't sue the phone company because they used the telephone to plot the crime because they're just providing the service. And they applied this to these social media companies. They put them under that, for lack of a better place to put them. But the right wing criticism comes from, as you said, they are regulating comment. In other words, when you call the phone company and say, you know, you're planning a robbery, the phone company doesn't cut your service off. They're unaware of your services. What you're saying. They're just providing the service. You know, the idea is the social media companies aren't publishers. They're just providing the platform. But yet when you get into this situation where the social media companies are banning people that disagree with the government, that disagree with the narrative, then they are de facto have become publishers and they are regulating comments. So should they or should they not be legally liable for it? At the end of the day, it always comes back to the real solution is the opposite of what these so-called experts say it is. The real solution is to, yes, put them under 230, but make it like our phone company example. They need to be an impartial platform. In other words, the solution is the opposite of what they say. The solution isn't more censorship. The solution isn't more cutting people off and not allowing them to speak. The solution is more freedom of speech. The solution is for these social media companies to become a neutral platform. Again, people making terroristic threats can and should be reported. I mean, like, you have your social media companies. If you had to, like, present your ID to make an account, but the trade-off for that was that, you know, you have actual free speech, you're allowed, you're not going to be shut down, you're not going to be persecuted for your wrong think opinions. I mean, that would be a trade-off I think that would be worth making. So others might disagree with that. But yeah, no, at the end of the day, the solution is actually to let people have the discussions that need to be had. It would create more social cohesion and not less, which is what we're seeing now with all of the censorship.
Surely more dialogue is what is going to be best for everyone, not more censorship. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.